set the lock button to stop recording. Are we recording? I think we're recording. So I'm supposed to hold it up to my ear to record. But I don't want to hold it up to my ear. I want to sit here to record. Is that thing recording? Anyway, I managed to get my password back. I tried to get my password. I couldn't get my password back. And we got no idea. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, what is this? Is Anchor thing? Yeah. You seem awfully quiet. You're not saying anything, but you're laughing. What?
Yeah, I just find it absolutely hilarious that Bruce wrote, can't write the software for the stock exchange.
Or something, anyway, yeah.
He can, like, mathematically solve the structure of the galaxy or something like that. He can write programs from scratch. And he tries to download an app that has been designed for people that have no idea how to use a computer, or how to do anything, so they make it as simple as possible. And he gets himself so tied up in knots over this thing. And it's not the first time it's happened. It's like every time he tries to do something that, like, has it all really nice and laid out clear for him, he can't handle it. It's like, I don't know if he's, like, trying to download the app using, like, Ubuntu or something. It's like trying to rewrite the system as he's, like, downloading it.
I didn't write the software. I don't know how to use it.
This happens all the time. He's, like, swearing at it and practically throwing his phone across the room because he can't figure it out. I'm like, okay, well, you better get back to your mathematical equations, then they're easier for you to manage. That's my story for today.
There, I see. You get to slide the button, and then it starts the recording. A book I wrote called Physical Truth, A New Philosophy. And basically, I'm talking about truth. How can we know it and recognize it? Should we follow it and adhere to it? And does it matter? The truth exists. The truth is real. The truth is so real that the entire universe is made up of the stuff. So the whole universe is like made out of truth. It, not only is there such a thing as objective reality, and truth takes its part of it, but the objective reality itself is truth itself. Our culture, the culture of the Western world, the culture of Northern Europe, is very, very recent. Our culture goes back only about 2,000 to 3,000 years. It's just at its bare beginnings, and our recent way of life is but a few centuries old. Yet even we of a materialistic and self-indulgent society have our cultural roots in the search for truth. The Greeks thought truth to be a supreme virtue. Vikings and Celts thought fate could be changed through acts of great courage and virtue. The Middle Ages saw the birth of our legal system based on the belief that truth was so powerful that an honest man could not possibly lose in a trial by combat or be abandoned by the source of goodness in an ordeal. My journey has come to an end. I was walking along the banks of a dried-up river in southern Alberta. I was thinking of truth and the many truths that follow from it. How am I going to explain this? I thought. I looked down and saw stones in the riverbed, many of them. I saw one in particular, reached down and picked it up. I thought, this will do nicely. A perfect example of truth. I held the stone with a degree of gratitude. It is so remarkably simple. I thought back. My search for truth began a very long time ago. I was rather young, I guess 10 or so, in the late 1950s. I'd read The Life of Socrates from a wonderful book for boys called Socrates. I really admired the ancient philosopher for laying down his life for what he believed in, esoteric though it was, and grasping the crown of martyrdom when it was offered to him. He said he was an old man anyway, and what the heck, may as well go out defending what he believed in. I mean, it's kind of cool. Obviously, I didn't get out that much. Actually, it was because of my father, who's very old now. He's very old now when I wrote this, but, you know, now he's actually has passed on. I'm also getting on, but still have a few decades to wait. Now, Dad was a high school teacher, and to say he was pragmatic would be a gross understatement. I was ordered to my room and forced to stay there for at least 4 hours every night to study from the time I was in grade four. Now, there's not much homework or study to do in grade four, but that was the way it was. There were no electronic games. They hadn't been invented yet. As a matter of fact, TV had just been invented only a few years earlier. All I had to keep me occupied was a copy of The Elements by Bernard and Child, a compass with which to draw circles, a straight edge, and an eraser to poke holes in with the sharp end of the compass. I could do every construction in The Elements by heart, and it set out to trisect an angle just to try and keep my mind alive. I got to be very good at Euclidean geometry. Sometimes I snuck down to my dad's study and read old books. Socrates was one of them. This journey came to a major turning point in grade 9. I was taking physics and hadn't a clue what it was about. It made no sense at all. Breaking down, I asked my dad for help with some of the problems while we were at the supper table. "What do you need help in?" he asked. "Is it your math?" No, Dad, it's physics," I replied. With the mention of the word physics, my father froze, and I could see the fear of God Almighty cross his face. He was terrified. "No," he said, I can't help you with physics. You'll have to ask your prof." He lowered his head to resume eating, avoiding my look. I had to take the shot. My father had never shown fear of anything, ever before. I was beginning to see the locked door of my bedroom where I had studied every night begin to crack open, and there was light on the other side. "No, Dad," I said, "it's just physics to see what would happen." My dad jumped back in his chair, wide-eyed in terror. "No," he said hurriedly, "I can't help you. You have to ask your teachers." He then jumped up from the table and quickly ran out of the kitchen. His supper was left barely touched on the table. Needless to say, the next day, I was down at the local library begging the librarian to show me everything there was about physics. All they had was the Encyclopedia Britannica. I looked under P for physics and still remember the opening statement on the subject from the most prestigious encyclopedia in the world at that time. "Physics," it said, "is in a crisis. No one can agree to its fundamental principles or even to what the subject is about. This terrible circumstance is the result of the fact that no one can understand or comprehend a certain symbol. And this symbol is..." There was this symbol in the middle of the page, something like a pitchfork. It was actually the Greek letter psi, but it was a capital letter psi and bold, and white space above and below very much stood out from the page, this symbol that had created this massive crisis in our understanding of the universe, where we are, who we are, what's everything about, and so on. It went on. It talked about probability, but said the author of this terrible symbol, Schrödinger, declared emphatically that it could not be probability. It was all very, very important. And it all came from this formula. Now, I'm sure you've seen the formula. The formula is Schrödinger's equation. If you like, I'll just say it. IH bar de psi by de t equals minus h bar squared all over 2m del squared psi plus v times psi. Okay, now I'm looking at that. You have to understand that I'm only 13 years old. I'm in grade 9. I haven't even really had algebra yet. And I'm staring at this thing in disbelief. My mother had just been killed in a car accident. I'm still locked in my room, and I cannot get out unless I figure out what this stupid symbol means. All of the best minds in science have been unable to do so, even the guy who came up with the stupid thing in the first place. And this was going to take a lot of time, and it did. I took some quantum mechanics and atomic physics earlier on in university, but then switched to astrophysics. I was studying quasars. These things are 40 times brighter than an entire galaxy, have a period of luminosity about a month and a half, which means they can't be bigger than a light month and a half or so, and have huge red shifts. Quite a few have huge blue shifts. I'd begun with pencil and paper, as is my lot, and was mapping out the positions of the quasars on a grid. I placed an arrow pointing upwards from the position of each quasar. The length of the arrow was the length of the redshift. If the quasar was blue shifted, the arrow pointed down. It did not take that long to realize that many quasars come in pairs. I checked to see what was between each pair and found a galaxy. The gravitational field of the galaxy was causing a gravitational lens effect. There seemed to be a lot of them. I ran around campus and tried to get a paper together and to publish. I was only an undergraduate. I didn't know how to publish a paper. 3 months later, Physics Today published an article on the gravitational lens effect of galaxies on distant quasars. I was so pissed. I was like, couldn't get the thing together. No one would help me. I didn't know how to publish a paper. And here, this guy, 3 months later, is actually from New York, University of New York, who published it on gravitational lens effects in Physics Today. Now, there is not only a lens effect. I happen to know there's also a prism effect. There is chromatic aberration in the gravitational lens. The gravitational field is causing distant light to redshift as it passes through gravitational fields. The universe is not expanding. There was no Big Bang. Again, it was going to take a lot of time to prove. And it sure the hell did. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky. I've been extremely fortunate in my life to have met and worked with exceptionally nice people who are expert in their fields. Dr. Doug Hube taught me astronomy. Doug was or is the top observational astronomer in the world. I worked with and became very good friends with Dr. Margrave of geophysics fame, with Dr. Werner Israel, the top expert in the world regarding black holes and gravitation, my dear friend Dr. Keith Promislaw, number one in applied mathematics. All led me to the discovery of Rout's Law. The only way to win at mathematics is to cheat. I worked with Gary doing research into earthquake prediction in the late 70s. He introduced me to tensor calculus and showed me a proposed unified field theory from Misner, Thorne, and Wheeler. Now, Kip Thorne has just won the Nobel Prize this time. This is 2018. And I went, anyway, to Werner Israel's office, which was just upstairs, asked his opinion on the unified field theory. I wrote on the board. Dr. Israel got kind of angry with me and said it was crap. He erased it off the board. Then it took about 10 minutes or so to work out the unified field theory. There he said, that is the unified field theory. I put the accent, he's got a wonderful, wonderful South African accent. There he said, that is the unified field theory. I don't care what you do. Write it down, memorize it, or figure it out. I don't ever want to have to do that again. Of course, I forgot it and had to call him back about 30 years later. He was not angry. He was delighted. Shortly after my first meeting with Dr. Israel, I worked at the Alberta Research Council on recovering oil from Athabasca oil sands. There I met Dr. Teddy Schmidt and got very heavily into trying to find general solutions to nonlinear differential equations, in particular the free boundary problem. It took me 23 years to find the solution to that particular problem. We did it using an approach we called the general operator. Keith at Simon Fraser University showed me a perturbation technique I could use to set up differential equations, and using the general operator, we cracked the free boundary problem. It was time to return to the Einstein field equations. After a few years, I got to play with a radio telescope at the Rothier Observatory in southern Alberta, thanks to Fred Babbitt, the observatory's head technician. I found a way to measure the redshift of light passing through a gravitational field. I could relate the discovery to the field equations. I could solve Schrödinger's equation. I knew what psi was. I called Werner Israel after 30 years at the University of Victoria. Hello, Dr. Israel, I said. You don't remember me, but I was a student of yours 30 years ago. No, I'm sorry, I do not remember you, he replied. I wouldn't doubt that, I said. However, you gave me a little problem to try and solve way back then, and I believe I have something. I want to tell you about it. Oh, yes, he chuckled. And what is the problem? The unified field theory. Oh, he said, the unified field theory. Physics is in a great crisis. Nothing makes any sense. There are now an infinite number of universes with an infinite number of theories. It's a terrible end to physics. Yes, I know, I said quiet. I think I might have something. I can relate Schrödinger's equation to the Einstein field equation. It looks like it all makes sense. There was silence. Silence for quite some time, and then, Well, said Dr. Ezio, if what you are saying is true, it would be a huge breakthrough in the field of physics. With more science and with a bit of humility, I said, yes, Dr. Ezio, that is correct. A bit of silence, and Dr. Israel just broke out with a good, hearty laugh. I'll never forget it. And shortly after, we spent an afternoon going over the unified field theory and an approach to deriving quantum mechanics from classical theories. And a couple of months later, I was walking by a dry riverbed and saw this stone.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you liked what you heard, you may subscribe in your podcast provider and perhaps share in various social media sites. Bruce has promised he won't change the links anymore and screw up trying to find the next episode. Please enjoy the rest of your day and may everything work out for the best. We try to have a new podcast every Saturday, so see you next week.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.